outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Welcome. This is going to be a podcast unlike any other I've done before, because this wasn't so much something we did to broadcast. It's actually a personal conversation with someone struggling their own journey with Jesus. The topic came up after our first ever God Journey After Show a couple of weeks ago, where we had some people come on Zoom and we talked through some issues. And he was a part of that conversation afterward, wrote me some things he would love to have talked about, just couldn't figure out how to get it started. So I had some email exchange. I said, well, I'm happy to talk to you personally. And he wrote me back. And in his email about wanting to have more of a conversation, he said this: God feels like an aloof parent who has no hesitation throwing me in at the deep end of life. I have often asked God to come and find me. Knock on my door for a change, I often say. But I don't have any sense of him doing that. And for the last 30 years, I have stubbornly knocking on his door. I read that Mother Teresa never had much sense of the presence of God, yet she was the hands and voice of God for the poor. I wonder at times if I should accept a life of drought like hers. As I talk to people and travel around who read some of my books, listen to some of my things, and hunger to have an intimate relationship with God, I've heard the same thing. God's like the distant parent, may write a letter once a year, but never comes to visit, never there when we need him. And I don't believe God's like that. I don't believe what Mother Teresa lived is what God had in mind. I think God wants to know us and us to know him in the intimacy of our own heart. I often think that happens, though, not in the way we're looking for it to happen. And so for that reason and many others, it's easy to miss the very ways God's already talking and communicating and loving us. So when we set up the conversation, I asked him, I said, would you mind if I recorded this? Will it change the conversation at all if I do? With this promise, I will not release it without your approval at the end. He said he'd be very open to that. So we recorded it, and now I've edited it. I've cut it almost in half. Took out the things that were more personal, the things that probably you wouldn't have as much interest in, except from a voyeuristic perspective, which is not good enough. And what we have left, I think, is a pretty good conversation to help someone else who's processing this own struggle. I see God in some ways, but I don't see him loving me. And why it is that that could happen. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This, I said, this is a special podcast. This is a personal conversation. And I'm going to run it to you in the way we've edited it, and it's pretty long, but you're going to know within 5-10 minutes whether this is a conversation that interests you or not. And if it's not, feel free not to listen to the rest of it. If you do listen, however, and somehow you have got some of these same issues in your own journey, and you want to talk about it more, this Sunday, April 19th at 1 o'clock a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, we're going to have another conversation, a God Journey After Show, for those of you that want to join us. Now, if you want to join us, you've got to email me, waynej@lifestream.org. Email me. I will send you the link to get into the Zoom session. You got to email me before we start. I had some email during the show last time. I really can't add you once we're in the conversation. So if you want to send me an email, I'll send you back the link if I can. If there's too many people and it just gets, that's what I'm worried about because of the number of people that listen to this podcast. If it's too many people, we may have to cut it off at some point and do another one. So you may get that notice. But if you're interested and want to join us, send me an email and we'll see if we can work it out. So here is my friend Sean and some of his struggle and some of what we talked about that I pray will open the door to him recognizing the God who has already got him wrapped in his arms. And yet for some reason, he can't see it.
I don't know whether you prayed for me or something like that. But 2 days ago, it's like the door opened. It's kind of shut again today, but I felt God speaking, and it was, and I journaled it, and God says, "You are being held. I am the net beneath you. If you fall, you only fall into me. I am the ground of your being. I am safety itself. You are not alone. I suffer with you. I am with you to the ends of your days and beyond. Death has not defeated me, nor will it defeat you. Trust me. Have confidence in me. you are being held.
Hmm.
And that's lovely.
It is. Oh my gosh.
That's tender. It's intimate. It's everything I want. It's what I want on a, and it's poetic in a way. I don't write like that, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Not me personally. So I kind of know it's not me, but it's came out through my pen. And I'm so hungry for that, for these moments. And but the door is kind of feeling more shut today. I just don't want to go back to this seemingly lifelong drought. To be fair, I get these moments, but they're so few and far between.
And when it comes like that, when you write that, is it just words that come, or is there feeling and passion behind the word? I mean, is it emotional as well when it happens?
It's partly that. Today, I feel like those are beautiful words, but kind of where's the practical reality? Kind of hurts.
It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts.
Reading it today or when you wrote it down, or both?
I cried when I wrote it down.
Cried what, though? What was the feeling behind the tears? Was it feeling loved? Was it feeling, gosh, I wish this were true and it feels a million miles away from me? I mean, where did the tears come from? Pain or joy or what?
A bit of both. It's kind of all that you're saying. It's kind of weird. It's a bit of tears of relief that I'm hearing something, and it's pain that I'm... It's even pain and anger that I've not had this for so long. It's like, now you turn up, you know. Why now? You know, why not those other times? It's all of those things. I mean, I think you put it better than I could have myself. And today they're feeling a bit more like words.
So is the emotion today different than the emotion when you wrote them down?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's like the really positive edge has been taken off. It's like, I've never taken drugs, but that sort of thing is a drug. In a way, you get a fix of that and you want more. I kind of need another fix of that today to feel okay.
Okay, go back to that. To feel okay about what? Yourself?
To feel okay about
life?
Myself, life, and the world. Yeah.
You always go with all of the above. I've noticed that. I give you options and you go, yeah, all of that.
I'm a big picture person. Intuitive, and I think I'm an empath. I don't know if you come across that term, but I
in Star Trek,
pick up on the suffering of others.
Okay,
it's like, and I've always, since a small child, you know, I remember kids being beaten at school, and I may as well have been the person. Yeah, I pick up on the collective suffering. I think that's why I don't like Facebook. It delivers the collective suffering and angst to me, and the news. You know, I really struggle with the news because it just delivers so much difficult emotion. It's hard. So I've got to minimize it.
Is there a bird in your apartment?
There's a bird just outside the window.
Okay, I hear a lovely sound.
Oh, I don't know what it is. I can't see it, but I know it's close by. I could do with meeting this God who talks like that. I could do with meeting him every day.
And what would that look like? What give me what the expectation is to have that connection every day?
God, he told me the other day, I broadcast on many different channels. So we're hearing the birds outside the window there. And God is in nature. He's in other people. He's in you, Wayne. And if I'm talking to you, this is, my head is assenting to this, but if I'm talking to you, I'm also talking to God, because God is in you. And you're a wise spiritual man.
And God is in you, right?
And God is in me.
So he's hearing it whether or not I'm in it or not.
Yeah.
You seem uncertain about that.
So if you weren't here, God would be no less present. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. But he may be less communicative without you. So I have some very deep spiritual friends and a very deep spiritual therapist. But still, even when they're there, I don't really feel God. I think I want to feel him. I want to be held by him. I want him to communicate with me at some emotional level and to bring healing to some of those damaged emotions that I've been working at for so long. I mean, my wife is present in the house. Can't see her, can't feel her, but I know she's there. And that's okay. That's okay. So I'm kind of saying to myself, why shouldn't that be also okay with God being present, even if you can't sort of see him? But I can go downstairs and I can ask my wife a question. I can say, you know, I can go and put my arms around her. But God is very alien, very, very, very distant. And that's been the story of my life. I mean, there have been some very interesting moments, and he's far more present. I actually feel him in my work when I'm with other people. I feel his love for people. Often feel him giving me something to say, and that somehow works out. That somehow there's a breakthrough with people. And it might just be a question. So when I coach, I ask God beforehand if he's got anything he particularly wants to say or anything he wants me to ask. And sometimes he just says, Sean, you go in and do the bit that you're really good at, and I'll do the bit that I'm really good at. And it's lovely. I like it. It's great. I could really do with the same intimacy returned to me by God. He's happy to work through me for other people, but for me, that's a different matter. And that hurts. I kind of know it's not true.
Good. Kind of know it's not true. Go back to that.
So there's something blocking, and you asked me why the disconnect. And I think that's a very deep question. There's a lot in that. I think when you've had a lot of trauma in your past, trust is hard. And a lot of neglectful and abusive adults around me. significant, serious events, mostly before the age of 25. But I went through them. It was possibly God said, I did feel God saying, Sean, have compassion on yourself.
That sounds like him.
Sean, look at your past. Look at what you've been through. I'm not going hard on you. So that was a tender moment. So yes, God does speak, Wayne. He absolutely does. But it's so few and far between. And the very darkest moments of my life when I have been crying out to him, he has been so incredibly far away. It's like the worse the situation, the harder he is to find. That's been my experience. And I'm kind of angry about that.
And you obviously put the blame on him for that, right?
No.
Okay.
No, because...
Then who are you angry at? Are you angry at him?
I'm angry at him for... It's like a kid. It's like a kid that's crying. They've fallen over and, cut themselves or something like that, and they're bowling. You'd kind of go over and pick them up and look at their wound and, try and comfort the child. But I felt that God doesn't really do that. But it's not lost on me that that's what my parents didn't do or my teachers. If I'd fallen over and cut myself, it was like, oh, pull yourself together, be a man. Life hurts, get on with it.
People who've suffered significant trauma, particularly by people they should have been able to trust, like significant people in my life, religious figures even, who present themselves as compassionate, loving people, but particularly are legalistic or vindictive or whatever. I think it is, you're right. I think trust is difficult coming from, and we've all had experiences like that, but the depth of those experiences differ. And so coming to trust, I agree that that's true, but not insurmountable. God's able to do that. I think the other side of it is interesting that the perception is, and that's how I would deal with it in my life. And I don't know why I would think differently, but If I feel like I've fallen down, I'm really hurting and I really need God, and then God doesn't come through the way I want him to, or the way I think he should, or the way I would think a real God would, my default in earlier days would have been, what's wrong with you, God? You're not being fair. You're not doing. My response now is, how am I misperceiving this moment? How are you coming to me that I'm missing? Not that he wouldn't scoop me up as his child and hold me, but I may not be perceiving that. And, I know perception is reality, but perception is also a hindrance to reality. I got that from reading your email, feeling this lack of intimacy and yet sharing all the ways you think God has made himself known to you, or even the words that you've shared here of things that God's shown you that I think, man, those are wonderfully godly moments. So the disconnect I'm feeling is not, why are you disconnected from God, but what's the disconnect in your perception of his presence with you, that you're not seeing him who is already there, already doing, already that. So that gets me to, what are your expectations of intimacy? What would that look like for you? Because I do find a number of factors that could be in play here. One is, some people I talk to about this kind of thing have expectations of what intimacy looks like for others that they want for themselves. And what they perceive others have is not what they have. And the word intimacy may really trigger wrong expectations of what God's presence with us looks like. Because if I have a moment like you had where you wrote those words, the little diagram, the picture you drew, and 2 days later, I'm still enjoying that, not looking at it going, so why isn't there more of that? Why isn't that more often? Why, you know what I mean? I see God unfolding himself in our reality a lot more nuanced than I call out to him and he's there. I have this need. Give me that answer. I look at it's more of a treasure hunt. It's more sorting through the realities of my life, looking for those fingerprints of God. And I describe that as intimacy, but I realize other people may not. Other people say, what? No, intimacy would be he's always there. I can go downstairs and get a hug if I need to, and it's right there. And I look at our connection with the transcendent as much more indefinable than that. My relationship with Sarah and my relationship with God, and I describe both as intimate, but they're both very different. I can go get a hug from Sarah right now. I can go find her, talk to her, have a hug. If I'm really hurting and crying, I can go. She's going to be there present with me in it. But I can
see God's way of hugging you.
Well, it's not just that. It's Sarah's way. So that and God is in it, certainly. But I can sit in my study and bear my same issues before God or my same tears, and I don't have an expectation that he'll do something right then where I'll feel hands around me or I'll feel like I'm being held by him. I don't look for that to be tangibly perceptive. That's bad. Tangibly is a bad word. Let's say sensually, in terms of the five human senses, I wouldn't expect that to be sensually perceivable, but not no less true. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Because I've poured out my heart to God about things that have gone days or weeks before I feel like that I'm alive to the response he has to me in it. Not that he's waited weeks to come to me, but that it's taken weeks for my perception of him to catch up to the revelation of him.
What you're saying there does sound partly familiar. I mean, I can't say that, you know, I've asked him things and then maybe weeks later I've got some sort of response. But I think, you know, I think it's, yeah, I'd love some sort of emotional, more emotive relationship, heartfelt relationship with God, because I'm a kind of heartfelt sort of person.
Mm-hmm.
But I do expect him to speak to me in many different ways, through different people, through different situations. But I guess I'm just not recognizing it a lot of the time. So you're talking about perception. Yeah. I mean, I've thought about that. What is it I'm missing? What is it that I'm not getting?
And I don't know if it's that. I don't know that would be the reason. Or simply that I'm not enjoying where God is making himself known, because I had these expectations that it would be more frequent, more often, more emotive, because the emotion doesn't come from God, right? God's not going to sweep over Wayne and give me this emotion of...
That's true.
Right? So my emotions are relating to my perceptions. If I'm perceiving that God doesn't have my back, that I'm at risk from the capriciousness of others or from the betrayal of someone else, if I'm going through betrayal and I feel as betrayed by God as I do my friend, that's not true, but my emotions will be set on that perception. If my perception is I'm loved, I may not see it yet, I may not know how, and I often pray that prayer, God, man, I do not feel loved in this situation right now, but I know that I am. And so I'm asking you to bridge that. How are you loving me now so that I can see that love? Does that make sense?
We'll write that down.
Because I think he always is. But like, okay, for instance, the lawsuit I was involved in over the shack. When I start getting that lawsuit and I start realizing, wow, I've got a friend that now, I've not had a conversation with him that went bad. So all of a sudden, there's this betrayal. It looks like a power play. It looks like we're going to put attorneys in line. And man, I am immediately my anxiety rises to about 99.9% on the anxiety meter. And I've never been in a lawsuit. I don't want to be in a lawsuit. I'm thinking now, oh gosh, every conversation I've had and how I go back and prove what was said to me. And I'm already playing scenarios of giving a deposition or test. I did skip the deposition. I was giving testimony in court. What would I say? How would I say it? And I'm saying to God, God, I don't know how you love me in this moment, but I know that you do. I know that you do. I just know I don't see it. And every day praying that and thinking that, every anxiety. And for me, that was 9 months before I woke up one morning and I could breathe. And it wasn't like God revealed himself in that moment to me. It was just, I realized when I woke up somehow over the past 9 months of me holding this before God and feeling abandoned, but knowing I wasn't. So I'm fighting that fight, feeling it. Yes, feeling it, but knowing it's not true. Somehow God expands my trust enough to encompass this lawsuit. And 9 months later, I wake up one morning and that pain, that knot in my stomach isn't there anymore. And now I'm not, my immediate response is not, God, why did it take you 9 months to do this? My response is, oh God, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Somehow my perception of your reality has expanded to include a circumstance I never thought it would have to include. And that's how I think God works. And to me, that's intimacy. Now, people would say, well, those whole 9 months, man, that must have been horrible. God just didn't care. God didn't do anything. I said, no, God's working that whole time. I'm just not aware of it. And if I went down, and I have for most of my life, okay, I'm only living this way the last 25 years or so. I've lived 42 years of whenever I feel God didn't do what I wanted, I'm going down that abandonment road of my anger increasing and years or two going by of missing that love because I'm not looking for it. I'm feeling like what God is not doing is proof of my premise, which my premise is wrong. So my perception is wrong. So all my emotions are with my perceptions, right?
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
And I just saw that in the little thing of 2 days ago, I get this, and it's mixed with anger. There's already some anger in it, but there's also joy in it. Now, 2 days later, the anger's more alive, and not reading that, I'm very touched by the words you read. You already are not being touched by those words in the same way. I mean, there's part of you that is, which is the God part of you. The God part of you is, and the other perceiving part of you is retreating back toward the anger, not often enough, not real enough, And then that affirms the perception that then causes. So there's kind of a cumulative effect here. If I go one way of where I'm looking for his love and I'm grateful where I get glimpses of it, that leads me down a different path than if I'm on this path of, yeah, I am abandoned. Yeah, God isn't doing it. Yeah, everybody has better something than I do. And I think there's two spirals here. What reality are we going to lean into? The thank you, God, for revealing even a glimpse of your love even 2 days ago.
Yeah,
or it's not often enough, not deep enough. And
you're right. I need to. So I hear, you know, from what you've said that it just takes time for your perception to catch up with what God is doing. I'm hearing that you're saying that I need to look out for the moments where God is loving me and being thankful for those, as opposed to kind of looking at for the areas where I'm not feeling loved and there's things I've just so wanted and needed healing. And I have worked so hard, so hard. It's felt like I'm the one that's had to do all the hard work. And God has sort of been saying, sort of leaving me to it. But as you say, you know, that's my perception. I agree with you. It's just been 100 times harder than I ever imagined.
Or than you see other people get away with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's part of the problem, right? The comparative thing is part of the problem.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
If you had 28 significant traumatic moments in your developing world, then yeah, wouldn't healing be a much greater work for you than it might be for someone else?
Yeah.
And I've watched this my whole life. I've watched people, you know, come to Christ and they're on drugs or whatever. And the moment they come for Christ, never have another desire again, or for alcohol or whatever. Mm. Then other people who, I mean, I got a friend who fought alcoholism, and he just was not going to go to any resource in the world other than God. God's either going to heal me or I'm going to die of alcoholism, blah, blah, blah. He got caught coming into work one day drunk, and his boss just took the keys to his motorcycle and said, listen, I'm giving you 2 weeks off paid leave. You're going to go to AA. And if you do, you'll keep your job. And if you don't, that kind of a thing. And that's the one thing you never wanted to go to AA ever, because it just didn't want to. You wanted God to deal with it, upset at God because God wouldn't deal with it. Started going to AA, and because he's a traveling salesperson, right? So that whole AA thing changed his life, because it gave him a community in every town he travels to, where he gets in a hotel and here's where I'm going to get drunk. And then he tells me, you know, the very thing I resisted for years and years and years, thinking I want God to do it instead. This is what God was inviting me into. This is how God was doing it. And if you saw your therapist not as not God, but as God in human flesh, then there's someone in this doing the hard work with you. This is a gift from God, not it's the hardest way I've had to do it on my own. Because you're not on your own.
Oh, it so feels like I'm on my own. There's a place inside me, Wayne, that even when I found other people, even though I'm with you now, I'm on my own. And I know that goes way back. You know, as a child, I had to do everything on my own. You know, I'm not looking for sympathy or anything like that. It's just a fact. It's getting better, but it's slow.
Is that perception or reality?
Mm-hmm.
Is that perception or reality that you're alone? It might have been true when you were a child.
Yeah.
It was true. You were left alone to negotiate things a child should never have had to negotiate by themselves. So that part's true. But is the perception now that you're alone? Is God invisible in there, I guess, is what I'm asking.
The perception is that I am alone, and that kind of God is leaving me to it. That's what it feels like in my heart. In my head, I'm saying, no, I'm not alone. But it's there's a disconnect between my head and my heart, and somebody described that as trauma. Trauma is a disconnect between what actually happened and how you feel about it. So yeah, I think my emotions have yet to catch up with actually what I believe in my head.
I hear you, but I'm not really talking about logic. I'm not trying to convince you logically that what's in your. In fact, somebody flipped this on me one day, and I liked it, because we've always talked about the disconnect between what I know in my mind, what I can theologically assert to be true, and what my emotions and heart disconnect from. And this person said to me one time, and I liked what he said. He said, "You know what? Romans 5 says the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts." It's not shed abroad in our head. It's shed abroad in our heart by the Holy Spirit. So the fact is, your heart knows it's loved. Your head has been shaped by trauma, by perceptions, by things that provide the disconnect. And to me, to flip those two around, because one just is making intellect king. I know intellectually what's true, but I can't seem to live it. And then we make that the heart-head dynamic. And I like the other idea of, you know what? My heart knows it's loved. My heart does. There's a part of my head that knows theology, that knows true theology. And there's a part of my mind that has been twisted by these coping mechanisms of trauma and whatever that lead me not to have the right perception of what's in my heart. Now, for me, that's an easier construct to kind of work through. It may not be for you.
In my heart, knowing I'm loved, that's a really...
But you're putting emotion to that, am I right or not?
Ah, Right. It says, this knowing that you're loved in your heart, that would bring some emotion with it.
It would.
You know, the way I feel love for others, I feel it here. It's tangible. You know, whether it's my wife, my clients, my family, or something I've heard about, some situation, I feel it here.
I understand.
I know what it's like to feel love, for it to go out of me. It's like I've got the transmitter, but I didn't get the radio receiver. but you're saying it's almost like, I think you can know truth. You know, truth, when you hear it, it hits you in the heart. You know it's true because you know it's true because you know it's true. I think that's what you're describing. I think that's what you get that I don't when it comes to God's love.
I think that's what you get that you don't recognize yet.
Yeah.
Because notice what you just said about the transmitter rather than the receiver thing, which would be impossible. You can't give what you haven't been given, that we'd know biblically to be true.
This is a really interesting thing, and I've wrestled with that one. You're not the first person to say it.
Let me follow through on observation, because you said earlier, when you talk about, you know, God speaking to you, it's mostly for others. You have insight for others, where you feel like God's speaking.
Yeah.
But he doesn't give that to you. So you felt, I think the word, you know, like God uses me for others, but then he leaves me outside of it, right? That's the same thing you're talking about being a transmitter and not having a receiver. And I think there's a place in your heart, my friend. This could be wrong, but I'm just going to say it. There's a place in your heart that the enemy has deceived you into not seeing God's love for you that you can see for other people. So it's easy for you to hear God speak love into other people's hearts.
Yeah.
And very difficult for you to hear what he's saying to you. It's not that he's not saying it. It's not that he's not communicating it. It's that for whatever reason, it's like the and this is a bad analogy. I don't have anyone, but it's like, it's like the, my grandson throwing a tantrum now, sitting on the couch, all angry and frustrated, and his mom and dad are in the room, love him dearly, are saying words of love to him, and he's rejecting them all, right? Because he's manipulating the moment. And I'm not putting all that aggression on you. That's not at all. But I'm saying the woundedness and your coping mechanism to deal with woundedness, and I always say this about coping mechanisms. When you're in a traumatic situation, a coping mechanism is absolutely critical for survival. So I'm not down on coping mechanisms.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the trauma is no longer there, the coping mechanism becomes the enemy.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I'm not down on them. They have a value in the survival mode. They don't have a value when it's no longer there. But if it's feeling like there's something in your spirit that's closed up to the love God is giving. See, that's easier for me to believe than God's not giving you love. God's using you to love other people, but he's not giving it to you. Just makes no sense to the God I know.
And it doesn't make sense to me. So, you know, I've wrestled with this perception thing. It is about perception. It is about perception.
It is.
And it's also about, as you put your finger on, complex coping mechanisms that we had when we were very young, which were all very clever and maybe very much appropriate at the time for dealing with the trauma. But we tend to bring those in with us into adulthood. And sometimes it's very, very hard for us to recognize when those coping mechanisms are, because there are they can be quite deep and subtle.
And one of yours seems to be, I've got to do this on my own. I'm alone in this.
Yeah, I've got to do this on my...
Which as a child, you probably had to do. And right now, you're not alone ever. God's not giving love through you that he's not also giving to you. So there's a filter that blinds you to seeing what's given to me, but you see it clearly when it's giving away from you, what's given out from you. Yeah. So it's a disconnect of some kind of perceptive reality here that I think God wants to put his finger on and liberate you from. So it's not like something more needs to happen other than I need to let God have this perception and I need to let this perception change. But 50 years of believing in this perception is a hard perception to break because perception does become reality, whether it's true or not. Well, it helps. I think it helps me to be able to say, okay, God, you wouldn't be the kind of God to love others through me and not be sharing that same love with me. So I wouldn't go down the road. The perception then is, so, you know, I'm broken. God doesn't reveal his love to me. He just wants to use me to minister. That's one way to go down. The other way to go down is, so God, what am I missing?
Used. By the way, I don't feel used.
But if he's only giving you insights for others and you feel mm-hmm. abandoned and he's not giving them to you for you, then that seems a bit odd.
It's odd. Yeah, it's really odd.
And yet I hear you. I see in your email, the times I've talked to you about your books, I see an incredibly perceptive person in most areas of your life.
Oh, I'm really perceptive
right.
about others. I'm...
And about God and others.
It scared some of my clients how quickly I've got to the heart of the issue. Mm-hmm. I think some of it's almost like I need to slow down at times because I think maybe I can produce too much truth too quickly. Just a couple of incidents of that in my coaching, but I'm people say I'm very, very, very perceptive. You've just said something there. You kind of shocked me when you said that. Sean, you're very perceptive, but you're not perceiving God. That's crazy. That's weird.
But that would be the result of a coping mechanism, perhaps. That when God gives you an insight that provides a breakthrough for another person,
yeah.
You feel them loved in that. You don't feel yourself loved in being a part of that.
Do I feel loved being part of that?
Yeah, God loved another human being through me. I know those are the best moments in my life. I feel so loved by God when I watch him touch another person through my life.
I feel glad.
I said loved.
It's not the same strength of, I feel pleased for the other person. And I admit slightly jealous.
Instead of a participant in it.
I'm a participant in it. And I'm honored. I could really do with some of that myself. Jealousy and anger. There's no point in jealousy. It gets you nowhere. But I've got to admit that it's there. It's small. It's probably more anger. I think one of the things, I think there is anger towards God. There is anger and disappointment. I think largely because of the sheer amount of kind of crawling through the dirt, you know, with regard to therapy, just crawling through horrible stuff. It's been agonizing, and I'm kind of angry about that. I kind of feel God could have done a lot more.
So it goes back to childhood, right?
It does go back to childhood. More recently, you know, literally in the last few months, my dad's sort of finally rejected me, never really accepted me as a person. always trying to change me. It was never enough.
What do you attach to that? That your mom and dad couldn't love you, didn't love you. Is that because you were damaged or unworthy of love, or is it because their brokenness?
Because of their brokenness, Wayne.
You didn't see that as a child, did you?
No, I just always felt it took until I became a coach, until I started my training. I mean, I'd been in therapy for a while before that, but that was my first realization back in 2003. That I was okay. It was a spiritual moment in 2003. I was on a counseling course and I did the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And I felt this hand on my shoulder in the middle of it. And I looked around and there was nobody there. This is one of the few precious moments that I remember. And this still small voice said, "Sean, this is really important for you. Listen to what this man is saying." And I did. At the end of it, I had a personality profile and it described me really well. It was like God was saying, "Sean, you're okay. You are okay." That was a profound moment. I found validation for who I am. I believe God is those in my lap to say, "You're okay. You are valid. The way that your mind works, Sean, is amazing. And it's valid." And I believe that. I believe I'm not stupid the way people told me. I'm dyslexic, so I do think differently. You know, I like me, Wayne. I like me. I'm okay. I don't like, there's things I'm really good at, Wayne. If I'm so perceptive about other people, what is it that's blinding my heart? If you're not used to receiving love and comfort as a child, you're probably going to struggle with that as an adult. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe I just need to move deeper into that healing, and I've got to still continue with the therapy and continue with the mindfulness and just trying to sit quietly with God in silence. I've probably got to continue with that. But I really would like a miracle.
Would you take something between those two?
Yeah, I'd take a mixture.
Because on the one hand, I need to do X, Y, Z, and that was a lot of stuff you listed, or I need a miracle. Those are two pretty broad extremes, right?
Yeah.
If we're waiting for a miracle, then we're saying, okay, God's just, what, waiting for something? I could do it today, but I'm waiting for a miracle?
That's limiting God. It's like the guy wouldn't go to AA.
Or I've got to keep doing this work, which hasn't provided this result that you're looking for.
Not yet.
So I'm going to double down on that to do more of that in hopes it will give me an answer it hasn't given yet. So I'm just saying, what if there's something in between those two? There's a range of things between those two possibilities. I'm going to work hard. There's going to be a miracle, right?
I have to daily.
No, no, no.
No,
too much. I, you're going to put all this on you.
Yeah.
It's going to wear you out, my friend.
This is it. Cause this is my perception that it's my job to do the healing stuff, to do the healing activities. What do you think's in the middle between those? Cause I mean, God works through the therapy process. I might not feel it. I might not even perceive it.
But you're already doing that, right? You're already doing that. So I wouldn't say stop that at all.
Okay.
But I'm hearing there's more I've got to do. You're doing that. And you're saying there's real value in it. This gal's been a real godsend to you.
Oh, she has. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I would love you and God to explore the perception thing more, because I think some of your coping mechanisms are getting in the way.
Could you actually put those, what are the questions you have for me?
Yeah, why don't I feel loved when you love someone else through me? I feel like they're loved, and I'm grateful to be part of that process, how you describe it, but I don't feel loved too. I don't feel loved in that moment. I don't feel like the love I gave is the love I had. I feel like I'm giving you, God handed me something to hand to you, and I wasn't part of it. Instead, that's what I mean by being part of it. You're part of the giving of it,
but
you're not part of the love in it. Like when God gives you this thing you wrote down that you showed me at the beginning. Why don't I feel loved by that even now? What anger?
Yeah.
What disappointment in God trumps my sense of being loved by him through something like this? Because I think it's a coping mechanism of some kind.
Yeah.
I think it's the abandonment. I should have had a better youth. I would have had a better adulthood if I'd had better people loved me. And all that's true. All that is absolutely true. But God didn't give you those parents for any particular reason. Like I gave you really bad parents. No, the draw of the earth is you got parents who weren't capable of love. And now you're going to find a way to God's love past that, which is going to be awesome. Right. But it's not, God didn't do it to you.
God didn't. No. This God did not. God has not inflicted anything.
Then where's the anger coming from? Where's the anger at God coming from then? What are you angry about?
I think I kind of need to feel safe from his judgment. There's a primitive, deep part of me that is afraid of his judgment. This is not lost on me. I've had a heck of a lot of judgment. Judge intellectually, up here in my head, I'm saying judgment, a loving judgment of God will be a God who puts all things right. This is in my head. It's up here.
Right. What's your emotional response to be freed from judgment? What judgment are you talking about?
You're not okay. Get out of my sight. Yeah, it's a rejection.
So it's rejection.
That's a part of me that needs healing.
And why would God reject you? Why? Why are you afraid of
that? There's kind of a lot of scary verses.
You're not afraid of it for other people.
Bible.
No, but you don't. You're talking to people you're helping with your coaching business, right? Do you have that same fear for them? That there's these horrible scriptures out there, and you're probably in fear of judgment. You should be in fear of it.
No, I don't.
You don't coach that, I'm sure. So why do other people not have to be afraid of it, and why would you?
This is part of the disconnect, Wayne. There's a disconnect between.
Yes, it is.
Part of me is trying to stay safe from an angry God, because I got a lot of that. God is angry when I was growing up. And so it's like my heart is yet to catch up with my theology.
Why? Because there's a real key here, I think. Why do you not have that same concern with people you love that you put on yourself?
This is the question, Wayne. And I can't.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go away and think about this, because I don't.
Good. I'm not asking for you. You don't have to give me an answer right now. I think
I don't have
a question
to give
to
you. I don't know. At this moment. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. You asked for questions. I wasn't looking for answers. I was just giving you questions. This is what I'd explore with God. If you feel unworthy of love, you'll pass it on to other people, but you won't retain it for yourself. And for some reason, that no one else who knows you sees, not me, not your wife, not your therapist, that No one else would think why you would be unworthy of love, but you somehow perceive that. And that becomes its own truth because you pass it on, not realizing it was yours too.
Darn, Wayne, I am worthy of love. I am.
I know you are.
I am. But
but why not?
Still this disconnect. And
God, this is where God puts his finger, though. This is where God goes, I'm getting this. You said it earlier. God said to you, I want you something about being more compassionate with yourself, yeah. Right? This is one of the biggest discoveries for Sarah was, is Sarah would start telling me what she's thinking inside. I'll be going, you know what? You would never talk to me that way. You would never talk to your daughter that way. You would never talk to son that way. You'd never talk to another human being the way you talk to you.
Yeah.
Like if she forgets something at the store, I'm a failure. I'm so stupid. She goes into that thing. And there's something that the anger and the anger, if you can find out where the anger is really directed, when you feel angry at God, why? God didn't give you those parents to torture you. God's not brought coronavirus in the world to make your life more difficult.
Yeah.
Those things are just the brokenness of the world we're in. But somehow you internalize that in a way that makes you less worthy of the love you give to other people or yourself.
Less worthy of the love that I give to other people.
So God's wanting you to teach you how to love yourself. And in that, I think you'll find God's love more present.
Oh, yeah. I think...
You know what I mean? It's not that... I hope from this phone call, one thing you might come away with is God is loving me in the maximum way I can be loved. And there's something about the twistedness of what life did to me that makes me miss that. Not you miss that, but the twistedness of what life's done to you. So God wants to untwist that, and God is untwisting it. And part of that is learning to love you the way you love other people. Give yourself the same love you give to others. Give yourself the same freedom not to fear judgment. Because like you said, judgment is a gift. God's setting things right. That's amazing. Not rejection. God didn't reject you.
In my worst moments, I default back to, I suppose we all do, we default back to the kind of original programming and...
Which is what for you? What do you default back to?
Judge, very condemnatory God who demands more and more and more from me, I've got a drawing of this demanding God. Sometimes I like to try and make characters out of the thought processes in my head. So it's a bit like that Inside Out film, the Disney one.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and I've got a God character inside me that's sort of saying, you... you must do more. More is expected. You need to give more.
That's the road I was afraid you were going down. You said, well, I need to do more therapy. I need to be more quiet, spend more time. That's where I was afraid you were going.
More, more, more.
That the breakthrough is I and more. And I'd say, I think the breakthrough is relax.
Yes.
Relax. Intensity can be
well, this whole thing, if there's a blessing out of this whole thing, I am stopped. I am, I can't go out in the car. I can't go visit. So I've been spending the last sort of 3 weeks just going inward and going in. Inside me and hoping that I find more of God in there. I think I think the last couple of days there's been fruit from that, Wayne. Thank you. You've been a catalyst, and that's That's amazing. And thank you for listening.
Can I give you one more thing before we're done?
Yeah, sure.
I know this has been a rigorous session, but I want to expand just, and if you've heard me talk much at all on things, you've heard this before. So maybe it's a repeat. If it is, you can stop me. But this has been the greatest transformation of my life for the last 20 years. And it's summarized in a verse from Matthew 6 in the Message. It's where Jesus is talking about, you know, how many of you by worrying can add an inch to your height or a day to your life? Who can do that? And, right? None of us can. And this is how Eugene Peterson translates that next part. And this is how I want to expand what I said to you about relaxing instead of looking for more to do. Jesus says this, "What I'm trying to get you to do is to relax, not to be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to God's giving. God knows everything you need before you ask. So learn to think like him. Steep yourself in God's reality, God's initiative." And what I want to say to you is I lived my whole life for 42 years trying to get from God. Everything we talk about in religion is try to get a healing, get saved, get a ministry, get. And what do I have to do to do? And what Jesus is saying, look, shift all that over here. Wake up every morning. And this is what I do. I wake up every morning and say, God, what are you giving me today of yourself?
Wow.
And I just look, when I go through my day, I look for what God gives. Some days I don't see anything. Some days I get a thing like you got, a little thing in my journal that goes, oh my God, this is awesome. And then some days I get a word I shared with someone else, but man, it bounces back on me. What I shared with them is something I needed for my own life, and it made sense to something. So how is God giving to you today? That would change everything, I think.
Wow, I feel suddenly that's hit me hard, you know, in a good way. That's hit me in my heart, Wayne. And strange that you say that, because about 2 days ago when I was writing that down, I felt it very similar words to that, you know, Lord, what are you doing today? What is it that you are wanting to give?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just feel, I'm all tingly.
Yeah. And ask him when you read that, go back and read it, you know, in the Matthew 6. But when you read it, go, Jesus, teach me. You say, what I'm trying to get you to do is to relax. So Jesus, teach me to relax. Teach me to live in the giving of God instead of the getting of my own humanity. Just ask him. Explore it for weeks and months with him and see what he does. But and I think carrying that with the idea that it's not that I'm not loved, it's not that he's not here, it's not that he's not giving me, it's that my perception, whether it's rejection or disappointment or expectation, my perception is getting in the way, not that God's in the way, not that God's not. He is. I'm missing it. And Jesus, show me how I'm missing it. He will.
So I'm just writing this down.
I know I've given you a lot. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to overwhelm you.
No. I think this is deep, Wayne, and go and think on these things.
Well, that's about where we ended. If you want to join us for the after show, we'll be meeting at 1 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time. In the afternoon on Sunday, this Sunday, April 19th. I realize some of you are going to be listening to this after that date, so you're going to miss it. If there's enough interest beyond that, we'll see about scheduling a second one. But I really like it where it's more immediate, people who listen to the podcast pretty quickly, while the content's still fresh in their mind. That's why we're going with Sunday at 1 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us. And I'll see you next week right here at The God Journey.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.